This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
He kicks and delivers, and he struck him out looking at a fastball. Josh Jung is really upset. He thought that pitch was low, and he is letting Brian Onora hear about it. But this game has ended. The Mariners have won it 3-1 and swept this three-game series.
You're an idiot and you don't know baseball.
Ranger fans, you're not dreaming.
How can you not be romantic about baseball?
How can you not be romantic about baseball? That's the line from Moneyball.
What did you guys think of Hayden's intro?
Really poor.
I
should have made it. But I mean, hey, you know, you get what you get.
I don't hate it. You know, you got the Nate L call, legendary call. You've got Brad Pitt there at the end. And then you got the guy, I think, was it from Arliss?
I don't know.
Arliss?
I'll tell you what.
Did Arliss reference? Who was that first guy there?
That's
the first time I've heard it.
I think it's a really good open. Legitimately, I do. The only criticism I'll give it is there's a little bit too long of that music in between the pause.
I thought it was over
the
twice.
The pause makes me think it's over. That's the only thing that I would say
effect.
Tighten it a little.
Come on.
Tighten it up. Not tone. Can't say tone. Tighten up a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly.
Can't say tone?
That's from Knocked Up.
Can't say tone. Just tighten. Rangers get swept over the weekend. They still are just a half game back of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, yet, you know, they finally did crack the 50-run barrier. One of the last teams in the sport to crack that 51st run.
6 runs in the series, 24th in league scoring, 3rd worst offense runs-wise in the American League.
The only teams that have fewer runs scored in the entire league, then the Rangers, Chicago White Sox.
I thought you were doing a Peyton dramatic effect pause there.
Atlanta Braves, Colorado Rockies, Pittsburgh Pirates. That's it.
It's not good.
Not a list that you want to be on, but the Rangers do get swept. They are back, you know, at it. So, look, they get swept to Seattle, and now they get to play Ron Washington's LA Angels. That's tomorrow at the Globe. 7:05 first pitch right here on the fan.
You see the Trout incident with that fan?
Yeah, and he said, he apologized, said, we're cool. Mike and I are cool. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But he said, like, oh, I was just protecting my son.
Yeah.
I didn't see him. I didn't see Mike there. I was just protecting my son.
Trout makes a play and right. The ball is literally in the glove. The guy grabs it and wrestles it out. But then he looks stunned and afraid, immediately apologetic, like, I'm sorry. I didn't know you got moved in the stadium. I thought you got ejected and kicked out. They escort the guy out with his kid. Turns out they just moved him. And then he still got to meet Trout afterwards with the son, and Mike was really cool about it.
Yeah,
But he ripped the ball out of the glove.
He did rip the ball out of the glove.
But then he was like, it looked like genuine mm-hmm. regret.
Yeah, because, I mean, he instantly holds the ball out, like, here, take it back. And you see him going, sorry, like, he clearly thought it was like another fan's glove. He was trying to be a jackass to another fan, I guess, is what he was trying to do, pull it out of their glove.
And they did rule it in out, which they should have.
They should have. Because remember, this happened in the World Series this past year, where the fans ripped the ball out of Mookie Betts' glove, and they got banned. That guy got banned for life.
Yeah, because they almost broke his elbow in the process.
Yeah, they really did. Now, these guys they'll be back. I mean, he theoretically will be allowed back in another time, but he did get, you know, moved. Just moved.
Yeah, I know. I said that.
That's it. Just move. Nothing move. Are the Rangers bad hitters or just unlucky? This is from Ranger Savant Instagram page, Tolos, by the way. 75% of all major league hitters right now are hitting under their expectations for batting average. 75 of all MLB teams are hitting under their expectations, including the Texas Rangers, who are near the bottom in terms of where they should be and versus where they are. MLB batting average also at an all-time record low, 235. A 235 league batting average, that is terrible. But when it comes to Rangers slugging, two guys stand out as being unlucky above all. And that is, we've talked about him last week, Adolis Garcia. Because he's got one of the higher barrel percentages and hard hit ball rates of the sport.
He's hitting the ball. He is smoking ball. He's like 98th percentile in exit velocity.
He is right now 200 points below his expected slugging percentage. He is the seventh unluckiest hitter in all of baseball. Berger is the 11th unluckiest hitter in all of baseball. Tavares and Pilar are a little bit on the lucky side. Higgy, Marcus Semien is they're a little bit on the unlucky side, but the guys who are performing well is Lankford, Heim, and Seager. They are performing exactly to their expectations. And two guys to watch out for on the flip side of Adolis and Jake Berger is Josh Smith and Josh Young. They are performing a little bit more than their expectations for their slugging.
So do you guys always agree with this stat that you are definitely totally unlucky and that it will turn around? Is there any hole in the...
I'm sure there's holes in it. Yeah, no, I'm sure. If your contact rate is higher than normal, like if you're usually a swing and miss guy but you're making more contact, that's probably... And you're still unlucky, that's probably going to regress to where you start missing, and then that everything will even out.
Over 162 games, though, if you're in the 97th percentile in exit velocity, you're not going to be hitting poorly for the year. That will average out.
Right. Okay.
That's something where if you're hitting the ball that, like they mentioned this about Wyatt Langford at the end of last year, Baseball America did. If you hit the ball as frequently and as hard as Wyatt Langford does, Wyatt Langford's not going to be a 240 hitter. It's just not the case.
Where do you guys put that stat in the laws of average categories in sports? We've done that with the one-run Rangers, yeah, with the Bandy teams. Barnwell usually builds his surprise and letdowns based off a stat.
Right.
Is it one-score game with the 6 points?
8 points.
8 points. 8 points. Like turnover differentials. Like, where do you guys put that as, okay, this will turn around?
Talking about hitting the ball hard?
Yeah. Compared to the other law of averages.
I think it's very similar to... Well, Masters was yesterday. So let's just say you're a golfer. You're always in the fairway, and you're really good on the, you're always good in greens and regulation, right? Which is, if it's a par four, you're on the green in two. But you don't win and you don't score because you're putting poorly.
Yeah.
Putting is like the random, it'll eventually turn around. So I look at it like that. Like if you're constantly in the fairway and then you're constantly on the green in two, you're gonna score. Eventually, you're going to score.
All right.
Same thing. If you're constantly hitting the ball, or basketball, if you're getting open shots and you're just missing them,
yep,
eventually, Klay Thompson's going to hit those open shots.
Okay.
So look at it like that.
Yeah, and if you look at just right now, the top four leaders in exit velocity in Major League Baseball are Gunnar Henderson, Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge, Corbin Carroll. Like, I mean, those are good hitters.
Yep.
And so typically that's the way that you can, that's one of the ways that you can look at and say, all right, if you're hitting the ball hard enough, you're likely going to do that. By the way, Gunnar Henderson is 3 miles per hour over Shohei Ohtani in average exit velocity leaders right now, which is, everybody else is clustered together. He's hitting the ball 99.5 miles per hour on average.
Diamond Cavs here on 105.3 The Fan. The details of the Vlad Jr. contract. This is going to head us to a work stoppage. It's not going to be Shohei's. It's going to be Vlad Juniors.
Yeah, everyone's worried about NIL contracts and unions, and you guys are worried about baseball deals.
Baseball work stoppages. 14 years, $500 million. Okay, that's it. That's just the deal. But $325 million, this is a signing bonus.
So he gets it instantly.
Well, not necessarily. There's no opt-out clauses. There is a full no trade. No deferred money. $20 million of that bonus is paid this year, and the rest of the bonus is spread out until 2039. But it's all a signing bonus. So, you know.
So it's a spread out signing bonus.
It's a spread out signing bonus, which means they get to take that off the luxury tax.
Mm.
And, you know, these smaller market teams are like, guys, that's how we get our money. And it's not like Toronto is some major market, right? They're a revenue sharing
not after
taker.
Not lately.
Not lately. That's right.
Not lately.
But also, players' salaries are not paid during the work stoppages if they have a work stoppage. The signing bonuses are. So Vlad still gets his money, even if they go to a work stoppage.
Might be one coming up.
And so. There might be one coming up, but they're going to point to this as like, hey, this is going to send us to a work stoppage.
So the Dodgers may have set off alarms for everyone, and everyone goes to their accounting meetings and sits down and goes, all right, you better bring me 3 loopholes by the end of the month.
Right.
And here's Toronto coming up with one.
They've come up with one. So, like, they can say, hey, look, I know there's going to be a work stoppage, but you're still going to get paid this $20 million. Stay here.
Maybe this will be put in the new salary cap.
Yeah, that we could do that. How much is $325 million Canadian dollars, by the way? What does that translate to?
No US idea.
Yeah, because that's the issue right now. CNBC,
70 cents of the dollar?
CNBC wrote about this at the end of last week, that Rob Manfred and MLB owners are really starting to now push for, all right, we got to get a salary cap here. Or we at least need to start looking like, what does a salary cap look like? What does the salary floor look like? Because this has always been a non-starter for the Players Association. They refuse to do it. And what we'd say, MLB Players Association, probably still the strongest one out of all the unions.
That or
the
NBA, those are the two, right?
It's up at the top. But the MLB, they talk about how Manfred's recently given a couple different interviews where he says, this is something we're looking at. We're trying to investigate ways to do this. I don't think the salary cap's nearly as necessary as what you just referenced, Sean, which is, you got to put a stop to what the Dodgers have done. Like, if you really want to say, let's do something that will even this out or settle things down a little bit, it would be the issue of the Dodgers and their deferred payments. Because the way baseball looks at it right now is the reason why they think they might need a salary cap is because of the disparity in the local TV advertising deals. Too many teams have big advantages doing it that way. And so that they think, all right, we got to put some sort of limitation on this if we want to be able to even this out a little bit.
Yeah, and like, you know, salary floors and everything, but you know, you got to stop teams like the Dodgers and Yankees and Mets just deferring money. You know, it's not the way what you pay per year, that's your luxury tax payment. And they're trying to do this to skirt the luxury tax, which is essentially, you know, skirting a salary
keeping
cap.
You even with other teams.
Right.
Stopping Steve Ballmer.
From being Steve Ballmer. Like the
Jerry Jonesing yourself.
Right. The Rangers are a big market team. But, you know, they do not have the same advantages that the Dodgers and Yankees and the Mets do because of the Dodgers, Yankees, and Mets TV package.
Yeah.
You know, their TV networks are cash cows. Yeah. And the Yankees,
and we have Sandler.
Yeah, right. We have Sandler. The Yankees claimed a loss last year because of their TV, because they can write off everything. They claimed a loss. They made as much revenue as the Cowboys. They made $700 million of revenue. Their payroll is less than half that. They claimed a loss? what is so expensive?
Mark Cuban's School of Business.
Right, absolutely. The Sacramento A's.
You hate them.
I can't stand everything about them. Just get rid of the
franchise. What if we had the restroom across the field?
We had that. Yeah, they had the restroom in the left field.
The press conference.
The press conference in a basically it's a...
Is it a parking garage or a broom closet?
It was one of those containers. Those shipping containers. It was a shipping container that cut a hole in. And now their medical cart is running out of gas in the middle of the field. And they had about 10 ground crew guys try to push this thing. Could you not go in the back and get the gas can and run it out?
Is it gas? Is it not electric?
They said it was gas. I mean, they said
then that's their problem.
And it's like, what are we doing here?
They should be driving a Tesla golf cart.
Tesla golf cart. You would think in California.
You would think, yeah.
You would think.
Although they burned them all up out there.
But they're saying it ran out of gas. Could have ran out of juice, I guess.
I
suppose that's what it could have done. But what a Mickey Mouse organization this is.
It's like you're pushing an old Cutlass back to the...
belongs in the baseball segment we were talking about on 60 Minutes.
Oh, Savannah Bananas.
Yeah.
The Savannah Bananas are run better than about half of Major League Baseball. They're selling out every stadium.
It sounds fun.
It sounds fun. My kids went to one in Oklahoma City.
And describe it for those that don't know.
It's baseball.
Globetrotters?
It's basically the baseball Globetrotters. They've got games. They do dances. They do when you have a walk, you don't walk to first base. You sprint, and then the other team has to touch every player has touched the ball before they can tag you, and that's when you stop where you are. They've got a guy pitching on stilts. He's like 20 feet tall. It's fun. It's a fun way to go and play, and they sell out. They've sold out 6 NFL stadiums this year.
Oh.
They sell out every stadium they go to. They draw more than every team, basically. Every team that they play, every place they play, they are going to draw more than your player.
Diamond Cavs on the home of the Rangers with RJ Choppy. I'm Sean Sharif alongside Cowboys insider Bobby Roberto Belt. Are you rooting for the star? Or excuse me, I know you're rooting for the Stars. Are you rooting for the Mavericks Wednesday night against the Kings? We have Mavs and Stars playoff situation set and how shirtless LeBron set off an NBA legend next on Sean and RJ.
Around the boards. Bottom. Shot on and a goal, and it's Logan Cooley. He's given Utah the lead, 3-2.
Utah Hockey Club TV organization program with the Very audio.
Nice. Got it right, Sean.
Thank you, Pepe. Entire morning crew back together again. Sean, RJ, and Bobby on DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. What?
You know how long you've been gone? That this man just thinks he can sassily like cut off your intro and like sun you? That's how long you've been out.
I know. That's right. I dare ask who took, you know, the most shots or the deepest shot at me.
Me.
But there you go. Don't have to wait for the feedback. On April 10th, Pete DeBoer said, quote, "It's not bad to have some adversity as a team, particularly when you're not going home at the end of the night when we lose, as long as we learn and take the good stuff." Well, that was on April 10th. We are now on April 14th. And the Dallas Stars are in the midst, we're in it, of a 5-game losing streak, even though they have the Avalanche set as the first-round matchup.
In the weeds. We are deep in the weeds, this 5-game losing streak. I am more concerned with the 4 games prior to this one.
Yeah.
Once they figured it, once they lost to Winnipeg, really, honestly, once they lost to Vancouver, and they blew it.
I need to ask Spittle, how does rust work in hockey?
Colorado's going to answer that question for us. Colorado's season's already over. Stars have 2 games left. Colorado's played 82. So when the Stars play them, they are going to be the rested team.
Wow.
Colorado played. Did they play last night or the night before?
When did we run in? This was a question last year in the middle of the playoffs for the Stars.
Okay.
Because I think this was an issue where, trying to remember which one it was. Peyton, was it going into Edmonton where one of them had rested a while?
Because Edmonton, I think, swept the team before.
Yeah, and so Edmonton, 5 games. Yeah, Edmonton had been sitting, and we had this question, and I mean, Edmonton came out and won that series, so.
Avs played yesterday.
Yeah, so they're already done. The Stars have 2 games left. Now, I assume that the reason the Stars have the extra 2 games is because they got more time off from when they went to Finland earlier in the year, and it's like an NFL, right? They're going to give you a little couple of extra days break. So that's my guess on that one. We're going to find out because the Stars will have, half the time of rest.
No, it was reversed. It was Edmonton went to 7 games. Dallas got done in 6. So Dallas had like 4 days extra of rest than Edmonton. And then Edmonton beat them in 6.
4 days. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of athletes will tell you, we love the rest and we'll take the rest.
Yeah.
We'll always take it. But you do get a little bit rust.
I wonder how DeBoer will address this in terms of trying to work stuff out. Will he go the Belichick route? Like, no, we're not sitting everyone. We're going to work some stuff out versus the injury risk when you're already set with the Avs first round series.
Yeah, it is interesting. And, you got to look at hockey. I think hockey in general, guys don't take the nights off that they do in other sports. And, do you give your goalie a night off, just let him go? Or do you want to keep him sharp? That's the tug of war.
The Dallas Mavericks have their play-in opponent set. They'll be on the road in California to play the Kings. NBA regular season ended yesterday. Let's get you the seedings. OKC is the 1. They will wait for the 8. If the Mavs win 2 games, they'll take on the Thunder in round 1. Houston gets the 7. 2 seed for the armpit. Lakers-Wolves is set. Denver-Clippers is set. The other play-in is the Warriors against the Grizzlies. Over to the East. The Cavs are the 1. The Celtics are the 2. Knicks-Pistons is set, 3-6. Pacers-Bucks is set, 4-5. The play-in matchups, Orlando-Atlanta is the 7-8. 9-10, the Bulls and the Miami Heat.
Can I ask you something since you were out last week?
Sure.
Did you sense what I think we all sensed, which was Luka coming back to town almost made things worse than the weekend after the trade?
The intro really backfired. A couple things backfired. Doing the shirt thing, that backfired. Because I was asking people in the build, I asked Reetma for fan audio, but the other thing he did give me was the feedback on whether people were actually wearing those shirts. And you're watching on TV, and I'm like, I'm not noticing them. No one's wearing these shirts. So that backfired. And then that intro, trying to be all nice, him tearing up, backfired
His
on them
lip
badly.
Quivering. It's
and
like,
then he
you
stayed
idiots.
Behind for a charity event. He's destroying them more off the floor than on the floor. He's it's a clean sweep. Like, he's undefeated off the floor. He stayed behind in Dallas for a charity event, like a sporting goods store. Mm-hmm. He's sitting there signing. So that just reignited the fury and the anger that people had, I think.
He comes into town. Not only did he stay around for a charity event, we had pictures. We were talking about it the next day, that morning, because that was a Wednesday last week, or was it Thursday? Whatever day
Wednesday,
it was
Wednesday.
The morning of the game, so Wednesday morning, he like apparently blew through Cook Children's in Fort Worth, because it was a hospital that his foundation had worked with a lot. And so he went through, and there were a bunch of different signed items he brought through and stuff. And it's like, you guys have done. The Athletic had a great line about it after the game. They said, what Nico Harrison and Patrick Dumont failed to realize is any championship they could win wasn't going to mean enough to the city if it wasn't with him. Like, they didn't understand it means more to win with him than winning with anybody else.
Which, you know, I can defend those two guys. I'm not going to get into all this right now, but I can defend them if they're like, we think we can win a championship earlier and more of them this way. The goal is to win titles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, a great sports debate over, would you rather lose with your guy or just win one than right. win three with others? And I think right now we have our current answer to that. The big NBA story, though, that I wanted to talk about was this LeBron warm-up thing. You didn't play this, right? This is over the weekend.
Uh-uh.
So LeBron is shirtless, warming up before a Laker game, and NBA TV, like, they're really the undercover controversial station here. That, you know, they're supposed to be like the league partner. NFL Network, come on, step up, Rappaport, do something scandalous. Well, I guess he almost got in a fight.
Yeah.
But
because his rep, man.
Isaiah Thomas, Detroit Isaiah, not happy with LeBron warming up shirtless.
I just totally 100% object to this. And if I was the GM or coach,
me too.
I would never let one of my players walk out on the floor looking like this. I mean, we are a professional NBA league. We ain't summer league. We ain't, you know, at the YMCA.
Listen, I think coaches got to go back to suits.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. I just think
college and pro.
I just think the professionalism in our NBA league has diminished so much. And I like LeBron. I'm a fan of his, so forth and so on. But to walk out on the floor before a game with no shirt on and shoot, I mean, come on, man. This, where we at? What we doing? Where we at? Now, if you want to, Adam Silver, if you want to find somebody, find that. Put a fine on that.
Yeah, forget Ja.
Yeah, forget Ja, the guns.
Good job, Aiden, getting that video up on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Isaiah Thomas going off on the lack of professionalism from LeBron James.
Oh, LeBron James.
Don't football players warm up shirtless sometimes? I know college
That's
guys
That's football,
do.
Though. This is basketball.
Well,
this...
I was thinking about this in the other sports. Number one, I don't recall them on game day, like on the field.
Not you know when they go off like on each side, like for the 30 minutes before. I'm talking about like the 2 hours before they're just running around.
I don't recall someone shirtless. Bobby, you're there. They're not shirtless on game day at any point.
Not.
I'm positive I've seen Tyreek Hill shirtless on game day. And I know I saw Antonio Brown. He threw the jersey off, right?
That's because Tyreek never changed back in from his jumpsuit after the cops arrested him. But typically you'll maybe see a guy walk in with like a sleeveless cutoff or something like that. But yeah, generally not totally shirtless.
So take us from sport to sport. First off, a lot of people are like, oh, wow, Isaiah, thanks for lecturing us on professionalism with your sexual harassment allegations at the Garden. When you remember he was a Knicks executive and coach. Imagine a baseball player. It would be weird, really weird with a baseball player in the cage shirtless.
That would be,
that'd be weird. Yeah, it'd be weird if McElroy and DeChambeau were warming up.
Shirtless. Yeah, they would get thrown off the course.
Basketball just like more acceptable in your minds. Gym.
You're already half naked in your outfit, in your uniform.
You know what I mean? So I don't have a problem with it. I just wanted to see if the LeBron haters would hop on board here and whether you thought this was a thing that some of the old heads, the other guy chiming in agreeing with Isaiah there was Steve Smith, longtime NBA veteran. Yeah. But it would not be acceptable. We'd all call it out and talk about it if it was golf. We'd all talk about it with a baseball batting cage.
I've never seen hockey, but it's freezing. You're on the ice.
Yeah,
Tennessee did it in the playoff game against Ohio State.
We did. We all did. The whole team. Playoff game against Ohio State.
Yeah, and then they got their ass kicked.
The whole team ran out shirtless for pregame warmups.
Oh.
They were like, it's not cold. The cold's not going to bother
us. That was like an alpha thing, though. It's like, 18 degrees. We're going to be out here. Isaiah, I had to just look it up. I was like, do we ever even see Isaiah shirtless at his locker throughout his career? So I was just Google image searching. Peyton, do not try and take any sneaky photos over my shoulder. Never do. He must be a mushy middle guy. And he's just, I will say this. My first thought was, boy, the fact that he and Magic Johnson fell out, I'm stunned Isaiah wasn't more blunt in some of his criticism if he's uncomfortable with just somebody having their shirt off.
But I'm gathering that you guys don't take issue with this whatsoever.
I don't care necessarily. Is it unprofessional? Probably. Does it matter? I mean, LeBron's, I think this is one of those, like, if this
and
wasn't.
And LeBron's, really been an ultimate professional.
For sure. This is one of those jump the shark moments where it's like, okay, your nitpicking on LeBron is gone too far.
He's nitpicking.
If this was, let's see. If this was Anthony Davis, does Isaiah have the same, if this was Giannis, does he have the same vitriol? Or because it's LeBron, it matters? You know, I don't know the answer to that.
I think he 100% is critical of it regardless.
I agree.
That just seems like the way he is.
And do you think this is a thing?
No. But I mean, I also get how, like, once it was said and I started thinking about it, I was like, I don't see anybody shirtless warming up. And if I was sitting in the crowd, it might be a little odd of like, why is somebody shirtless walking by me?
Bobby wanted to take a moment. I don't think it's a big thing either. Bobby wanted to take a moment to praise Devin Booker and his favorite NBA coach, Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah, I don't like this. I don't like how this has made me feel. We'll start with Devin Booker here. So, Devin Booker, as we know, when you get towards the end of the season, there's a lot of different things throughout the NBA of load management, guys who don't play back-to-backs, guys who take 8 weeks of paternity leave. There's a lot of things that get in the way.
Oh, God.
No, but one of them is, at the end of the season, stars a lot of times will sit out.
Doesn't tell me whether we're having a baby or not. I decide that, Bobby. Unlike your house. Get control.
That's good. You'll have stars rest at the end of the season if they've already clinched a playoff berth, or if they're eliminated, guys will not play in meaningless games, quote unquote. Devin Booker, to his credit, played the other night, the final home game in Phoenix, and I actually liked what he had to say about it.
In front of those fans that I just spoke about, you know, it took a real Suns fan to be in there tonight and still cheer with pride, and, you know, it's something I don't take lightly. You know, they've always showed love to me, so, you know, I pay the respects to the person, either it was their first time or maybe their last time ever seeing me.
Now that's getting some headlines, though. He says, whether it was their first time seeing me or their last time seeing me. Because now people are saying, well, is he talking about the fans last time or that he's not going to be there anymore?
Right.
But either way, I have respect for him saying, yeah, it was important to go out there and play because somebody paid to be here and came to probably see guys like me play. And so I wanted to be out there, especially with how this season has gone. So I liked that. I thought that was good.
And Mazzulla?
Mazzulla, who is Mr. I feel like most time you ask him anything, he's going to go like, well, look, I mean, most of us are likely to get murdered in a back alley anyway. Like, he's just a psychopath. Well, a Boston reporter, I felt like, was trying to set him up a little bit to like, hey, you want to criticize that kids have been on your bench this year? And he did
kids
it in a,
like Sirianni kids?
Like the players'
the
kids. He'll have players' kids. They're allowed to hang with their parents on the bench occasionally. So this came up in a press conference, and I was actually impressed that Joe Mazzulla didn't give a psychopath answer.
What have you made of all the kids on the bench this year? Obviously, you know, it's fun. It's kind of getting, you know, they dance with the crowd and stuff. But what kind of environment do you think it's made for the players?
I mean, I'd say if you were to ask me, it's one of the highlights of my small tenure here is the culture that we have of the kids being in the locker room, the kids being on the bench. I think, I think this is Braylon's first time in Boston. And, he addressed the team today and he had some strong words for the guys. And I thought it was important that we took that. But to just have the memories that you're going to have for that, for your son to be around, I think is the most important thing. So it means a lot to me that the guys are willing to bring their kids around and you get to see the joy of do it because, you know, they're not there all the time. And so they get an understanding of why they're not there and they get an understanding of how much it means to the family. So I hope that continues.
I'm glad he didn't finish that by saying, because you know your kid might die in a car accident tomorrow, and that life is precious.
So are they at the end of the bench during the games?
A lot of times they're behind them, and then occasionally if they're smaller kids, if it's near the end of the game, the guys will have their kids with them in their lap or something like that. But it's just it's nice that Missoula didn't turn it into a psychopath thing.
Well, speaking of psychopath, Bobby's rap answer, musical answer, answer. Yeah.
It's good
to the nosebleeds. At 9:20 this morning, after your Master Sunday recap at 9. But first, below the belt, what can we learn from the Cowboys' 30 visit lists with draft week right here upon us? We got Draft 101 Thursday night, the official coverage next week, the 30 visit lessons on the home of the Cowboys next. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Is the number 12 pick starting to come into focus? It sure looks like it. I think we're going to get a receiver here in Dallas.
Oh, yeah? Even though Mel Kiper disagrees?
Yep. Look, I mean, Mel Kiper is starting to waffle a little bit. He continues to put Omarion Hampton on there. We did his mock draft. I think he came out last Tuesday.
It's a sexy pick.
It is. We talked about that. He said I was a little bit 50-50 on this. He changed. The first two times, he was like, this is who I'm picking. This time, he was a little like, they could go receiver here. They could go with Matthew Golden. He's not as big of a fan of Tetero McMillan from Arizona. But I think we could be heading that direction. Real quick, it is our staple draft event this Thursday with you, the Tolo. Draft 101 in our fan showroom, 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas. So we're going to have Brian Broaddus there, Zach Wolchuk, myself, if Zach will be willing to sit with me after 9:20. Yeah. I guess we'll just have to see. But you can join us for a night of draft talk, debate, and questions. Not only that, dinner on us thanks to Whataburger, plus plenty of giveaways, completely free. Cannot wait to see you guys for Draft 101 on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the Pin. No sign-up is required, and the doors open at 6:45. So show up, come hang out. We'll have a really good time. Okay, so the Dallas Cowboys, they typically go off of their 30-visit list. That is their history in general, is that they have picked somebody with their first pick that was off of their 30-visit list. And I'll explain what that is here in just a sec. That shifted in recent years with McCarthy. I don't know why, because McCarthy didn't necessarily have a... didn't always assert his influence here.
How heavy-handed was he in the draft?
He wasn't. I mean, this is something that was a discussion after he left, was that he felt he didn't have as much power as he should have. And the reality, I think, was he didn't know how much power he had that he just didn't use. It's like almost he thought it should have been spelled out for him. It's like, no, you carried a big stick in there and you just didn't know it.
Because he had more influence here than Green Bay.
Yeah, but he wanted to run it after a while. Like, see, that's the funny thing. When he interviewed for this position, he told the Giants, I think he interviewed with the Giants and the Jets separately. Were the only other two interviews he did before he got this job.
I would hope it wasn't one joint interview.
I mean, you never know. They share a facility. Giants. They might have just sat down and said, "Hey, let's do it together."
Woody and Joe Shane in the same room interviewing Mike.
So
glad you pointed that out.
When they interviewed them, he told them specifically, "I don't want to run personnel. I just want to coach football." And I think he told the Cowboys that too initially. And then I think early on he started getting more of a handle on it. And you get a little bit of taste of that power. You go, "Hey, you know what? I would like more control over this." I think, and I think that's what happened here. And he thought he should have had more. And it's like, I think you had the amount of power you wanted and you didn't always realize it, because they will listen to you. The Joneses will listen to you if you're a head coach and tell them, "Hey, this is what I think. This is what I want." And so I just don't think he ever wielded that influence. Now, the 30 visit list is basically during the pre-draft process, you can bring 30 national visitors in, quote unquote. Those 30 national visitors are players that are not from...
So excluding Dallas Day.
Just your metropolitan area. So if you went to college, high school, whatever else, in the DFW metropolitan area, in fact, it's a really wonky way that they measure it. They use a literal like U.S. Atlas map to measure it, and it changes year by year what counts. But generally, if you went to TCU, UNT, SMU, or you attended high school somewhere in here, basically anywhere you can hear us right now on the radio, if you lived there or went to school there, you can qualify as Dallas Day. The national visitors are people outside that. You can get 30 people here and you can run them through medical tests. You can have them do whiteboard work. You get really intimate, like detailed visits with them over the course of the entire day. So that's why you've seen guys like Texas receiver Matthew Golden posting pictures on Instagram with Jerry Jones, because he's out there. In fact, I'm pretty sure I was in Frisco the other day, that same day that he was there. The Cowboys bus was at a stoplight and went right before I was going. I'm pretty sure Golden would have been on that bus if he was here that day, or somebody else was. It was probably them getting driven back to the airport. But it's an important time, and the Cowboys typically have used that as like, hey, this is where we get to know things, and this is where we get to understand about guys. So it was something where this list right now is very heavily populated with a few different positions off of the reports that we've seen, but a lot of this is skill position players. So a lot of the names that we've heard so far, Tet McMillan from Arizona, the receiver, Matthew Golden, Texas, the receiver, Luther Burden, the Missouri receiver, the running backs, Omarion Hampton from North Carolina, Travion Henderson from Ohio State, Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State. It's clear that what they're looking at here is trenches and skill position, because it's all receivers, running backs, offensive and defensive line, other than one corner, Siobhan Revel from East Carolina, who tore his ACL. Cowboys probably want to do a medical check there. And then the other is Andrew Makuba from Texas, the safety, who, again, that may be a medical check, or because they're looking at some of these Texas players, because they brought in Kelvin Banks, the offensive lineman, Alfred Collins, defensive lineman, Matthew Golden, receiver. A lot of times they will bring somebody in to ask about somebody that they're thinking about. So, okay, you were a teammate. Tell me about your guy on the defensive line there in the defensive side of the ball, Alfred Collins. What did you think of him? Like, they use it almost as intel. In fact, there was a funny post recently. I want to say it was...
How overshone it appear, right?
I want to say it was actually Zach Martin recently had shared a post from one of his teammates, and the Cowboys, when they would bring you in, they used to take you to AT&T Stadium. I don't know if they still do that, but they'd bring you in there, and they'd throw a graphic up there on welcome so-and-so, and they'd have a big Cowboys logo, and it was just part of the whole presentation. And this teammate of Zach Martin's had his image up there, and he shared it to Instagram the other day, and he goes, throwback to when the Cowboys brought me in just so that they could find out a little more about Zach Martin. And Zach Martin reshared that. He's like, ah, come on. They liked you, buddy. Just don't just think it was that. But
I think that guy wound up getting drafted?
Late. Not by Dallas. I don't remember who it was, though. But I mean, it was somebody like late day three who had got taken. But they've used this before, where that's how they'll look at things. And so I think this is really coming down, the sense you're kind of getting out of the star right now, is that this is coming down to receiver. And that you're likely looking at, if they don't move, which we talked about at the end of last week, Tampa Bay GM Jason Light saying this is a draft where he doesn't anticipate people are going to go up. Like, if you're going to probably get a discounted rate to move back because nobody looks at it as like, I want to go up and get somebody, then I think what you're looking at is either Tet McMillan, wide receiver from Arizona, or Matthew Golden, wide receiver from Texas, who are two very different players.
Yeah, Golden's your explosive.
He is very much still lacks a little bit of polish, but has a really high ceiling as a route runner. Incredibly fast, 4.29. It was the second fastest time by a receiver at the combine.
Woo.
He's somebody who moves really explosively laterally. It's just a matter of putting that all together. He's got really great balance and awareness on the sideline. McMillan is different. McMillan's a big kind of possession receiver, but moves really efficiently. So even though he runs a 4.55-ish, he is a natural like glider when you watch him in stride. And so you don't feel like you're watching a 4.55 guy.
What feedback have you gotten from Tolos, like with the draft shows or, you know, Twitter, social media, on the top two that they want and the one that they don't? Like, terrified of Hampton?
So Hampton is a concern, I think, for people just because they know that's a running back who's not Genty, which I think is fair. It is interesting that every time you look at the draft process, it's the influence of what we're doing with Draft 101 and things, and it's really the influence of Brian Broaddus and how long he's done this and how much he's done to educate people, that fans start really trust. So if Brian doesn't like somebody,
yeah,
typically the fans will not like somebody, which that's not, I think that's actually a good thing that Brian has that kind of influence and has built that sort of trust with listeners. But I think that because of that, Mykel Williams, the defensive end from Georgia, scares them. I think that when you look at the fact that there's a lot of people who don't love the idea of Luther Burden, who I don't think he'd go at 12 anymore, the receiver from Missouri, that's not really an option for them. I think that you've got some people who like Mike Green, the edge rusher from Marshall, and that's a guy that Brian really likes. So the influence is here. I'll say this. There was a time where everybody disliked Taco Charlton when he got picked, pretty much. Me too. But a lot of that was the pre-draft chatter that a lot of us had around the Cowboys community, who the evaluators who had watched him didn't like him. Similarly, there were a lot of evaluators who didn't like Tyler Smith. That's why people killed the Tyler Smith pick too initially, is because they heard they don't really like him. Brian doesn't really like him. You know, oh, I hear, you know, David Hellman talking about him. Hellman doesn't seem to really like him. He's super raw. So I think there's got to be some there's got to be some room to let these guys become who they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might be Taco, but they might be Tyler Smith. Or the Vander Esch pick was hated right away. Vander Esch played really great his rookie year. You're not as good of a defense in 2018, getting to the second round, going against
Rams without him. Position. Like the Cowboys, I know, but that was more like the Cowboys had just picked Zeke. They just picked the running back like 2 years prior.
Yeah, but he was still kind of a no-name.
He was on the no-name side, but we knew, like, we had heard his name prior to the draft.
Right.
But it was just like, you know, it's a linebacker after a running back. They looked behind on the positional value.
Though.
He was very good.
He was fantastic. Injuries killed him. If not for injuries, Leighton Vander Esch is absolutely a slam dunk pick. And I think that what you're going to see with the Cowboys, I would not be surprised if one of these offensive linemen slid down there. We asked Nick Harris at the end of last week when he came here to report on the Mavericks game as he went to the game for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
I thought that was to watch Bronny, he said.
Yeah, that too. But we had asked him, like, hey, who's your surprise pick that you would say, this is somebody we're not really talking about, like a Tyler Smith was or like a Mozzie Smith was. And Armon Membu, the tackle from Missouri, was his answer. And I still think if there's somebody in the trenches that could slide to them, that would make a lot of sense on the offensive line side. If Will Campbell got down there, if they like Membu a lot and he's able to go down there. I think there was a time Kelvin Banks from Texas was high on this list. I don't know if he still is, but a couple months ago, I would have thought, yeah, that's somebody who absolutely could be in contention for them when they pick it at 12 or if they go and decide to trade back. But they've got a lot of different options here. I think that ultimately the value is going to be at receiver, and so they're going to go that way. We keep hearing Steven talk about number two or that they need a number two receiver. That's a high priority. Steven Jones actually going to be on the station this week. Let me check the text there from Alec Medford. But he's going to be on the station on Tuesday at 11:30. So tomorrow at 11:30, we'll hear from Steven Jones. And I would imagine we'll get an announcement this week on a pre-draft press conference. It's a little surprising we haven't heard from one yet. But I think we're going to start feeling over the next week a little bit of clarity. And I think that clarity is going to start focusing around McMillan and Golden and getting a number two receiver.
And Dane Brugler back on the station Wednesday at 4 p.m. with the G-Bag Nation.
Always getting our seconds, whether it's our raps or our guests, I guess, you know.
9:20, will this finally end the battle between Bobby and the nosebleeds? 9:20 this morning after we figure out if you were rooting for Rory or not. How awesome was that Master Sunday? Next on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan.